With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Do you know what time it is?
Is it time to get ill?
No.
Okay. Then no.
Okay, good. It's nearly halfway through the year, which means...
you're right. It's
time for us to do a quick rundown of our gear of the year so far.
Yes.
In December, as always, we'll be doing our big gear of the year celebration, rundown of our favourite gear of the year. But every year, we also do a kind of mid-year episode, and it's time for that now. If you want to hear what our thoughts are on this year in gear so far... Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. And $5 a month gets you access to an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds every week. So this week, it's me, Jay, and Matt doing a bit of a shootout of our best gear and sharing some thoughts of how 2017 is shaping up so far. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Hello.
No Joe Branton this evening.
Who?
Exactly. He is out recording with Polymath. He reckons he's doing 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. every day for like 8 days. He's going to be a wreck.
No, I think it's more than that. I think it's like 10 days.
I think he's just doing 8 days where they're only in the studio, and then he's just doing evenings, I think, after that. So
I can't wait to hear that one song that they're going to record.
I saw him briefly the other day, and firstly, he looked absolutely wrecked. He looked about 10 years older after 2 days in the studio. But also, he said... They recorded a 45-minute song,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
something
did.
Like that.
He had said that they were doing that.
I think the new record is one song.
No, I think it's three songs. I think it's three songs over, but I think it's got to be a double LP. I'm sure that's what he said.
Yeah, it is a double LP because no label would put it out.
Of course.
So it's digital only. So they're doing like a limited pressing on vinyl, and then it's like digital download only.
I mean, I'm into it.
I like Joe's band. I know you guys don't really
dreadful.
Care, but I like Joe's band, so it's all right.
No song should ever, ever be longer than four minutes. 4 minutes is the absolute maximum. 3 minutes, not ideal. 2 minutes, pretty good. If you can get it somewhere between the 1 and 2 minute mark, you've got me for life. Like, that's how short they need to be.
What about the Beatles?
Yeah, on the early albums, most of the songs are less than 2 minutes.
What about on the later albums?
Well, you know, you give them...
Revolution number nine.
The songs, yeah, I mean, you just forget about that. The songs are that good that it doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's fine.
But you should check them out, really.
I reckon you should probably listen to the Beatles. They were sort of like this quite obscure sort of rock band back in the day, the 1960s.
Yeah. One of them died.
And got
replaced by someone else.
John Paul... George,
yeah.
Up the front, Bongo on the drums, and yeah, there's a couple of nice little tunes.
Cool.
They did That's the way you want it. No. I don't know where this is going. Matt and I, talking about Joe Branton, you had a chance encounter with his doppelganger, Beau Banton, this week.
Yeah, a much nicer, friendlier, smarter, all-round, better guy, Banton.
Just go up to him and go, all right, Beau, do you like prog? Rubbish.
Nah, hate it.
Hate it. I love a bit of Britney.
Do you want to go for a drink? Oh, don't touch the stuff, mate.
Oh, God. Oh,
how long's that new song you wrote? Oh, it's under a minute. It's an absolute banger.
Beauty.
Use any pedals? Nah, mate. Straight in.
Beau Banton.
Well, the Beau Banton character, as portrayed in your new video, Matt, he's got a fair few pedals.
Yeah, so we were at work. We were tasked with creating a funny advert for the MS3, which is incredibly difficult when you're not really a comedian, and trying to script something funny is pretty impossible. So I called Joe Branton and said, do you want to do something funny? Because Joe is generally quite funny, like,
what?
Most of the time.
No,
what
he's
he just says, oh, he's, I don't know, I find him quite funny.
I would say he's
the moustache.
He's not funny. He is a joke, but he's not funny.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I called him. Joe, you're a joke, right?
Joke Branton.
Do you want to be Branton. In a joke? Joke Branton. So we were like, what can we do? Because obviously, like, people have been pretty sort of into the MS3 as a pedal, and kind of we were like, how can we kind of like sum everything up in like one funny punchline? So we were like, well, there's loads of stuff in it, so why don't we just set the MS3 up as a physical rig, as it were, and then have someone talk through it. So we took over 200 pedals down to a studio in Reading.
Of course.
How did you carry all of your pedals down from your bedroom, Matt?
I got my stretch Boss limo.
Yeah,
it's like just one long Boss pedal. So we took it down, set everything up, and then we kind of just let Joe kind of riff on it, and then we kind of set a few things up, and then we like sort of went, oh, it'd be funny if you said this, and then it took about 5 hours, I would say, of setting up and then walking through it over and over and over again until we just did a take and we were like, that's it. That's hilarious. And yeah, we were like, I was like, what would be better is if you said you were Beau Banton, because we couldn't think of a band name and we couldn't think of like a musician name. We didn't want it to be Joe, but we thought it'd be funny because so many people have found Joe hilarious in his tight trouser prog ways in the actual MS3 video, so we thought we'd kind of take the mick out of that as well at the same time.
I'm curious to know, what did the seniors at Boss think about?
They loved
Beau Banton.
They love Beau Banton. I think he's going to make more appearances. I just thought it would be great if Beau Banton was a real thing. And now he is.
Good.
Officially.
I have
guitar
to say,
jokes in pedals.
Yeah. I have to say, I thought the advert, as much as I hate to admit it, because Joe had such a big, you know, I like to be supportive of you, Matt, but, you know, I'd say my disdain for Joe outweighs my love for you. So, you know, but but I thought the advert was really good. I thought it was really good. And I thought Joe pulled it off really funny, really well. And like, there's part of me that, you know, just feels like I can't believe that this weird character that spawned off of the back of Guitar Nerds has now made it to the mainstream music press.
So good. But it didn't even spawn from here. It was just someone started an Instagram account.
Well, yeah, completely.
Beau Banton.
Someone on the Facebook group said, wouldn't it have been funny if he was playing a Bahartelli and a Blues Junior, which I appreciate you couldn't have done because, you know, you've got an amp that
would have been fantastic.
You know, but that would have been so, just like getting in a couple of extra little Guitar Nerds Easter eggs into the. I think that
it
should be what you need. What you
good.
Do now, you need, just need to try and get some Guitar Nerds Easter eggs into each video that you do.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I took some of the because obviously we couldn't use 200 Boss pedals, so we did take some other ones down. So although you can't see anything clearly, the audience participation pedal is the Techno Foo. Because
I saw that the Svee Sound Techno Foo.
We were like, oh, we need to get the lights flashing, even though you couldn't see it in Final Cut because we did it all as one take. Like, I was like, how am I going to get the lights working? So I just plugged all the pedals in and just turned the gain up on everything and then just left the lead unplugged. And it was just going mental, like all the lights were going crazy.
For those not in the know, it's a pedal that sounds, I guess, like It's a metal pedal, isn't it? It sounds a bit
like a metal zone.
Yeah, it sounds like a metal zone, but it's like in this weird like die-cast chassis, but it's got like volume controlled lights on it. So the more you like, the harder you play, like the lights change color and stuff. I did spot that, Matty. So that was well done, I think.
But it was funny because there was a video that hasn't had that many views, but another pedal company made a video called like Stuff Guitarists Say.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and it's them, these people going, oh man, my pedal only sounds good when it's got the blue LED and things like that. And it was like all these like cliches, and we were like, what can we kind of fit in? And actually, when you try and get it down to a minute,
yeah,
it's really difficult, because originally it was supposed to be 30 seconds and we were like, that's impossible.
Listen, my
vision, can't get enough across in 30 seconds.
My vision for this is you need to speak to the management at Boss, and you need to get this played somewhere on TV in Japan. And so Bo Bantam becomes, you know, like in Lost in Translation where Bill Murray's character's doing like the whiskey adverts. Yeah. Imagine just Bo just there doing a little Suntory whiskey advert on like a massive billboard in Tokyo somewhere. That would be the ultimate dream.
Because I mean, you've been to Japan, right? The adverts in Japan, like on billboards and stuff, are like
they're
compared
huge
to the stuff over here.
Yeah, they're, you know, if you get one of those like headline, I mean, you see it in that film. I think that's the kind of good example that a lot of people will have seen, like Lost in Translation, where, you know, Bill Murray goes over there as an American, he's an actor who's, he's playing an American actor who's kind of on the sly doing whiskey adverts in Japan, and his face is like plastered everywhere. I just want that for just Bo Bantam, the side of Tower Records.
I mean, that would be amazing.
The side of Tower Records in Tokyo, just a big Bo Bantam holding an MS3. That would be, that would make my day.
I heard from the engineers, because obviously there's a lot of younger engineers now working at Boss,
yeah,
and who worked on the MS3, and they all loved the video and bought Polymath Records.
Really?
So I can see, like, I said to Joe, I was like, I better get your international shipping sorted. But I was like, that would obviously be hilarious if she's like, yeah, can you come over and play a gig? Yeah.
Just want to see him like
end and then up take off.
I think bigger than that. I think the band needs to get big, but he needs to become the character. Needs to become a celebrity and end up on like a game show in Japan. That's my ultimate dream. If that happens, I think we should just finish the podcast, because it's mission complete. You know, job done at that point. Jay Cross, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good. You got some news of your own?
I do. I do have some news of my own. So I haven't really said anything because I wanted to get settled in and everything, but I've got a new job.
Oh, yeah?
Started a new job a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And
milkman?
Yes.
The first world's first vegan milkman.
And I work for Fender now.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Another one of these inside. That's basically what I'm working with now. All three of you trying to get your little plugs in and ruin this podcast.
Not at all, not at all.
So, and I'm the one who has to be here, the voice of reason, the last angry man saying, no, reel it in.
Yeah, so I work for Fender now, and there won't be too much of a crossover because my job, so I am now product manager for Fender Audio,
okay,
the audio division, which is basically PA. I know, didn't know that Fender did PA. That's why I'm here, my
right,
friend.
So this is getting cut out.
I am in charge of in-ear monitors. Did you not know that Fender did in-ear monitors?
Right.
Exactly.
That's
why
getting
I'm
cut
here.
That's okay, getting cut. That's my territory.
Okay. Right.
Only I may only I may plug headphones secretly on this podcast.
And yeah, some other bits and pieces, but essentially audio. So there's not like a huge amount of crossover with the guitars and stuff, you know. So don't worry, there's not going to be.
So you can slag everything off definitely without getting fired.
What, I mean, when have I ever done that?
I mean, yeah, nothing's going to change basically.
So it was funny because I was a little bit like, oh, I don't know if I like start, you know, once I'd say that I work for Fender, people are going to. And I went back and I actually recently I listened to the first GAC podcast.
Yeah.
And if you listen to that, like the first thing that comes out of my mouth is Bahartelli and Blues Jr., mate. Like it's one of the, like, so there's precedent there. You don't need to worry. Nothing's going to change. I still love Fender, mate.
That's the funny thing, isn't it? Because when I came out and said I was doing the Boss thing, everyone's like, oh, I've been really biased towards Boss, and actually you guys have known me for so long that I've only ever really talked about Boss, and you've only ever really talked about Fender.
I know, completely.
So we kind of just ended up naturally washed ashore on our respective islands.
Absolutely. And all Mark needs to do now is work for the WWE. And,
oh, yeah, I mean, 100%.
And then we'll all be there.
Just wait. There's like the first...
Man, if we get Stone Cold on the podcast.
Yeah. I don't think there's any... Are there any WWE celebrity guitar collectors? Don't think so. I was thinking about that, though. So last week, obviously...
Honky Tonk Man?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we couldn't have him on. Too disrespectful to guitars. So I was thinking about that last week. So we had Ian Lee come on the podcast to talk about his new show and guitars and stuff. And obviously, we do a load of cool interviews with people in the guitar world. Matt, these all go on the Patreon channel. Matt obviously does them with pedal people, and I've been talking to people who are very much in the guitar world but doing different stuff online. But we should try and get some celebrities on, because I think you could talk to them in a way that no one else would interview them about guitars and stuff. Like, the one that I've got in mind, and this is would be a huge get, and would he ever be able to do it? Jason Momoa, so Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones, Aquaman in upcoming Justice League movie, massive guitar collector. Like, if you go on his Instagram, it's basically one of two things: pictures of him with his shirt off, or pictures of him in guitar shops going like, yeah, I just bought this 58, mate, love it. and I think you could have a really, really good conversation with him. Like, you know, request an interview and say, look, we don't want to talk about... I mean, you can plug it, but we don't want to talk about Justice League.
Yeah.
Don't want to talk about comics.
No.
We don't want to talk any about... We just want to talk about guitars for half an hour of your time. I don't think that's unreasonable. I think we could legit get some proper movie stars on the Guitar Nerds podcast.
Yeah, and I think... it's difficult, though, isn't it? Because a lot of people like that are only interested in plugging their stuff. And so, like...
But I don't think there would be. I think that if you were to go to their agent and say, like, oh, we want to interview them, they'd be like, get all the plugs in and stuff.
Yeah,
but I reckon
sure.
We've got enough ins in the world of stuff. Like, we know people who know actors. I reckon through, you know, 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, as it were, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, we could get to these people, and I think we could do it.
Yeah.
I'll interview Aquaman any day of the week. I'm so up for that. I think that would be great. If there's any celebrity secret guitar...
Yeah, anybody
nuts.
Who's into guitars, who isn't known for being into guitars, let us know.
Neil from Art Attack, Neil Buchanan.
Yes.
Massive guitar collector.
Great. Marseille.
He would be great. His guitar collection is basically all Les Paul Juniors and like a couple of Les Paul Customs from what I remember. And he can talk really eloquently about all the guitars and stuff and like gigs he's done. And I kind of want to get him on and never mention Art Attack and just go, God, guitars are brilliant, aren't they? And hopefully go, yeah, they are. I've got loads. Do you want to talk about them?
I
think that would be super cool. So if you're listening and if you know anyone... Firstly, if you know celebrities who are big guitar nuts and would want to
guitar nerds, there we go.
If you think that they could talk for half an hour about their guitar collection with us,
I mean, even if they can't, will they just sit there and listen to us?
Well,
fine. That's usually how my conversations go with people nowadays.
Yeah, they just sit at you dribbling,
and I just say, "Oh, do you know what's great?
Fender guitars." PA. just a little bit of housekeeping about some upcoming plans and stuff, but also another bit of housekeeping, something that we just found out today, something gone really screwy with the iTunes podcast feed. So if you're hearing this and you did subscribe on iTunes and you still get the episode, do let us know. I suspect that that's not going to happen, and people who don't listen on iTunes are going to get this fine, and by next week this will all be cleared up. But yeah, working through it now, it looks as though there's some weird iTunes store glitch that has caused it.
Because our feed got replaced by somebody else's feed, is that right?
Yeah, so basically the way that podcasts work are you submit a... So where we host our podcasts spits out a file, an RSS feed. So it's basically a feed of information that contains text... And an MP3 in this case, but it can contain other things. So you basically give that to your podcast app. So in my case, I use Pocket Casts on Android, and I put the feed in, and that then knows to look for to see if a new file has been put into that feed, and that's why it downloads it. you also give that feed to iTunes. As a podcast producer, you give that feed to iTunes and say, this is where our podcast is. Every time a new episode comes in, make sure that everyone who's subscribed to it in iTunes then gets that new episode. Now, for some reason, what I think has happened is that iTunes have put another feed where Guitar Nerds is, basically, or should be. So everyone who's now subscribed to Guitar Nerds, for some reason, all received an episode from this other girl's feed. It's called, like, Into It With Amelia or something, Into It With Emily. And I don't know what, I didn't even listen to the episode, but and I don't know why it's happened, but I think by next week we should have fixed it. So if you're hearing this, well done, because I think this episode is going to be a bit difficult to find.
Well, alternatively, maybe our feed has been dropped into somebody else's. So,
well,
maybe
this could have happened. So
maybe someone who was expecting a cooking show,
yeah,
is now listening to us, although they've probably turned off by now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, they're going to turn on and go, Bo Banton.
That's a strange cake.
Yeah, but you know, someone might find our voices soothing when they're expecting.
Excuse me.
Well, indeed. So if you're still listening to this, well done, because I think it will be hard to find. If you're listening to it on iTunes, it's probably next week by now. So the next bit of the podcast is not going to be so relevant, because we're going to dive headfirst into
news.
Indeed. So, first bit of news. PRS announced the shockingly expensive John Mayer Private Stock Super Eagle 2. Matty, you love a bit of John Mayer. You love a bit of PRS. Tell us about it.
Well, it was funny because I've been reading some comments and someone went, why are we even discussing this? How many folks are going to be willing to shell out 11 to 12 grand on a guitar? This is just nonsense. Well, I can tell you exactly 100 people that are going to shell out for a £12,000 John Mayer.
Yeah.
The 100 people that bought the first one.
Yeah.
If you're a John Mayer fan and you can afford a £12,000 guitar,
you can afford another one.
You can afford another one.
Yeah.
It's not a one-off purchase. If you've got that sort of money, we've all worked in guitar shops long enough to know there are some people out there that are serious collectors. But there's 20 left for those 100 that have already bought one, because they bought the first one. They're making 120 this time. So, you know, if you missed out the first time, you might get another chance. But yeah, basically, I'm amazed they announced it so quickly, because it's been like less than a year. Because I saw the original one in like October last year. So, yeah, once again, an upgraded Super Eagle, the one he's been using on his tour and the Dead & Company tour, which is where he's playing with the Grateful Dead. Slightly longer scale length than an all PRS, 25.375, specially wound pickups.
What?
With...
25.375?
Yep.
Classic.
Yep.
What's that extra...
Just to be awkward.
What's that...
Just to be awkward.
Wait, 23.375. So that's an extra tenth of an inch. What's the
I'm sure it's probably something to do with the tension.
Yeah.
It's probably something to do with string tension.
Yeah,
but then
I
again,
so.
If you're John Mayer and PRS is going to go, look, I'm going to make this guitar, we're probably going to give you a cut of it. You know, they're going to be expensive.
Yeah,
you'd be like, oh, neck doesn't feel right. Oh, no, they're scrabbling around. What can we do? John doesn't like the guitar. Oh, add a tenth of an inch onto the neck. Nailed it.
Wow.
You know, it's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, these are the ultimate private stock guitars, basically.
Wait, no, sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's not, is it? Because it's 25 and a half normally, or 24 and three quarters.
Yeah,
it's not 25 and a quarter.
It's down from Fender scale length.
Yeah, yeah, it's down from Fender scale length, yeah.
But still quite an odd one.
By a...
0.725
of an inch. Really weird.
Yeah, it is really weird. I'm sure it's got something to do with
0.125
tension or something. But so you get three John Mayer designed narrow field pickups, each with their own coil tap. You get the audio preamp that was in the last one with the treble boost. You get all the usual gubbins. There's like a hand-drawn and hand-signed sticker inside as well. Private stock curly maple back, which is like all one piece. I mean, it's an impressive-looking instrument, like, nonetheless. I mean, PRS always have been. They've not necessarily been the guitar that I've been drawn to on a high-end sort of thing, but visually they are pretty incredible. Yeah, limited to 120. Most stores will probably only get one. That's obviously worldwide. But yeah, an impressive instrument.
There's there's just so much going on with it. Like, there's so much going on. You know, you've got the quadruple A flame, or
yeah,
maybe that's one step above because it's extremely flamey.
Yeah.
The F-hole, the extra pickup that's in there, the three mini toggle switches, then the other toggle switch.
Wait, why is there three mini toggle switches?
Because there's three toggle switches, so you've got pickup. Coil split for each pickup. Okay. And then you've got two extra toggle switches, one for the treble boost and one for the active boost. See what I mean? Like, it just looks...
What I like about it, though, from far away, because I'm...
It's quite subtle.
Yeah, it's quite subtle. And even the fact that they've gone for that... are they called narrow field, that middle pickup, Matty?
Yeah.
The narrow field in the middle, like from a distance, that just kind of looks like a two humbucker PRS without any weird stuff going on. So it is quite good that it's all hidden
away.
I
like those narrow field pickups as well. They came on the Swampash Studios.
Yeah, they were great.
One of the first ones, so they were great guitars.
They also did... do you remember when they bought out a range of guitars? They changed... Was it called the V11 finish or something like that? Or V12
finish? The V12 finish,
something like that.
Was it V12?
So that's...
No, V12 sounds like the finance company.
Yeah. I'm sure it's like V11. It might have even been V12 as well, but they bought out a new, like, thinner finish, and they bought out a range of guitars that had three of those narrow field pickups in. For me, that was the best-sounding PRS, and they didn't do any flame tops, from what I remember. I think they were just like... black.
I'm pretty sure
and
that
white.
Was the Swampash Studio.
No, it had its own name. The Swampash Studios had two humbuckers and one of those narrow field pickups in there. But yeah, it had three of those narrow
fields. I know which one you're thinking, I just can't think of the name, but they were great guitars because they just, I think, you know, for I suppose players like us who aren't necessarily drawn to that real high spec flame top finish. They were just a cool looking guitar that was sort of like plain.
Yeah.
And they kind of just looked like a more normal guitar, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And this, you know, although up close this has got all that flamey stuff going on, actually, there's a photo I was just looking at of John Mayer playing one of these guitars live. From a distance, it actually looks quite understated. It's not like he's gone for a really fancy sunburst. It's just a pretty, I mean, what colour are they actually calling it?
Hemp green,
and it's pretty understated. And you know, there's always going to be kind of naysayers who are like, "Oh, it's PRS, it's really flamey." But I think on this, actually, they've gone for something quite subtle, despite the fact it's got all the ridiculous switching and stuff on it.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, people are like, "Oh, it's so expensive! Like, who's going to buy it?" It's like every time someone talks about it, that's their market. They almost don't need to do any marketing; they just need to release it, and people will start sharing it because of the price.
Yeah, completely,
price is part of the kind of the marketing.
It's
really?
Free marketing for them because they'll sell all those guitars and they've had a load of people online going, "Oh, John Mayer, PRS, expensive. John Mayer, PRS, expensive." You know, constantly chatting about it. It's genius in one way. Totally.
I think it's almost like if it was half the price, it would probably go unnoticed.
Yeah,
and I think
totally.
That's the thing. There's a lot of Gibson custom shops that are coming out now. I mean, I've been obviously out of the loop for a little while. And looking at some of the collector's choice, up to like collector's choice 50.
Yeah.
And some of them are like they're still doing them. And some of them are like £8,000 or £9,000.
But they're too expensive to be a guitar that a normal person would buy, but they're not special enough to be
a collector's
guitar.
Yeah,
they're not enough money almost.
Yeah.
And there's not...
Well, especially the other... And of course, you know, when they first came out, when we were working in GAC, that... It was okay, cool. Collector's choice. I'm a collector. I'll get one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they brought out another one. I'll get one of them. They brought out another one. I'll get one of them. But once you get up to number 50,
you're not gonna
people
have
are like, okay, well, hang on a
yeah,
sec.
Yeah. But also, when they first came out, they were collectors, or they were famous
guitars.
They were
guitars. Really well known.
Yes. Yeah, and now it's really like, well, it's Bobby Bob Knobs, Les Paul. Do you want this? It's $9,000. And you're like, well, it's nice, but I mean, what's the story?
Yeah,
you know,
completely.
There's got to be a story to a $10,000 guitar. Yeah. So, Jay Cross, do you want to tell us about another new guitar out this week? The Epiphone Lee Marlier Explorer Custom Artisan Outfit.
Absolutely.
Do it.
So, I tell you what, I'm really into this.
Okay.
This looks absolutely fantastic. So, we've talked a lot about it's come up a lot recently as well, the Lee Marlier Les Paul, and basically what he's done is he's released an Explorer in exactly the same with the same aesthetics. So it's got that that walnut finish, gold hardware, same pickups, which is a P94, which I think is also maybe what was in the Billy Joe Armstrong.
No.
It was a P100.
They're a humbucker sized P90. That's what the P94 is.
Oh yeah. Okay. Cool. So there's that, and then a 84 TLM. I don't know what that is.
I think something it's the Lee Marlier, maybe.
ELM. That's his initials.
Indeed.
I got you. Yeah. So it's got the same pickups in that the Les Paul does. Mahogany body, maple cap, and the other thing that makes it, I think, better than the Les Paul is because it's an Explorer, it has an Explorer headstock and not the standalone Epiphone headstock, yep. Which has always been a bit of a hard pass for me, which I realise is a bit cold to be so dismissive about a guitar because of some of the aesthetics, but I just don't like the look of the headstock.
Yeah.
And with this, it's got an Explorer headstock, which is super cool.
Also, you've got the old style split trapezoid inlays on there as well. Really, yes. Nice. And yeah, just a great looking guitar. You know, we talked so much about the Les Paul over the, what, 2-3 years that's been out?
Yeah.
That this is cool. Can you remind me, what band does he play with?
Bring Me the Horizon.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I guess it's metal stuff.
Well,
isn't
it's not that metal though, is it?
No, I guess
it looks a bit classier than. Not that I'm trying to.
Both guitars look a bit. I mean, in terms of how the sound of that band, I guess.
Yeah, of course. But they're very, very poppy. It's like very poppy metal.
Which is
like
why the P90 makes sense. Switch completely to the neck pickup for something a little bit cleaner, you know.
The other thing that's in there that's quite interesting, and I don't think was in the Les Paul, or if it was, I didn't know about it. And that's that you can. The humbucker in the bridge is coil splittable, and there's a dummy coil in under the scratch plate.
Yeah.
So that when you've got the bridge pickup in coil split mode, you don't get any. It's still noiseless.
That was on the Epiphone Nighthawk.
Yeah.
Was it on the Nighthawk?
Gibson one had
okay.
the same thing.
I don't think or it was the on the Lee Marlier though, was it?
It wasn't on the Les Paul because I don't think the Les Paul had coil splits. As far as I'm aware, I don't remember anyone ever talking about it.
No, neither do I.
But that's a cool idea, though, isn't it? To have that kind of like dummy pickup in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. One thing that I do like about this, just to go on a slight tangent, is I think the exact words of the press release are there is a dummy coil to eliminate 60 cycle hum, which is something we've been plotting to do. for about 3 years, and Epiphone have got there before us.
Well, they might have done it by inserting a random podcast into our podcast feed.
Sabotage.
So let's move on to some more news. Matt, do you want to tell us about the new Supro 168?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
5 RT Neptune Reverb.
Indeed. If there's one thing that we don't see enough of in the UK at the moment, it is Supro amplifiers, which is very disappointing because they are making some amazing stuff at the moment.
Definitely.
This basic rundown, Supro obviously make super simple amplifiers that are kind of just big clean platforms for kind of that kind of take on a AC30 versus Fender Twin, which is exactly what this is. 25 watt all valve 2x12 combo. Developed bizarrely in partnership with SIR, which are one of the US's largest backline rental companies, because I'd imagine they've probably had, oh, can we rent a Twin? Oh, I took it on tour and it broke. Oh, can I rent an AC30? It's like, it's just because those things get knocked around so much, I suppose they've kind of gone, why don't we just, you know, do something new, as it were. And with the Dave Coulthard from Pigtronics behind it, they've kind of done a self-biasing power amp with a full Class A tube driven tremolo as well, which is really nice, and tube driven spring reverb that runs on four springs in a 17-inch tank.
Crikey.
So that's like mega splashy.
Yeah,
that's a big sounding reverb. So yeah, I guess they're kind of they're going after the Twin and AC market.
I think,
yeah, I think it's a great sound. And $14.99, which I was like, that seems crazy cheap.
Yeah, yeah. It also, I think, is when they're talking about the requirements of this rental company, I think it's, yes, about what other companies are doing, but I think it's also about what Supra are doing. So I think it's the first 212 combo that they do. I think
they've had a lot of requests for maybe the same thing, but in a 212, because they've obviously had a lot of 112 combos.
Yeah.
But yeah, this just seems like a great amplifier.
Yeah, I think so as well. It's the first one to me that's kind of stood out as like, okay, this is like a proper big gigging Supro.
Yeah.
Because before, you know, they've done experiments with doing, you know, the smaller speakers and stuff. They didn't even do a little 8 combo, I think, at one point.
They've done a couple of small ones. Did they do one with a 15 as well?
Yeah.
They did a 15-inch one, didn't they? But none of them have kind of, they've always sounded good, but they've never kind of, one's never like hit me. And then just kind of reading the press release that got sent to us on this, I'm like, man, this actually, it sounds like just a good, clean, loud amp.
Yeah.
That you basically plug a telly into and just go straight in and that's it.
I don't know if you saw the, they've on the Supra website, they've stuck up some photos, and there are some photos of the amp in profile. So like looking lengthways down it. And the front panel is actually angled up. So presumably, you know how most people, when they've got a combo like this, you know, a little combo, you just tilt it back.
Yeah.
You don't need to with this because it's already angled up slightly.
Yeah, I don't know. All the drive, because all the Supra combos are like that from memory.
Are they all like that?
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't remember seeing it like that
before.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Matt, you probably could.
I think some of them are, some of them aren't. Right, I think the blue Taylor, the Rhino blue ones, or the vintage reissue ones have all been slightly angled.
Oh, I've never noticed before, you know.
And do you know, is the speaker in there on the baffle, is that actually angled, or is it just flat?
I don't know. They've not mentioned it. I think they are angled,
because okay.
I think the baffle is obviously, you've got the wooden baffle, and I think it's in line at the same angle as the grill cloth.
Okay, interesting. It'd be kind of cool to get some clarification on that. So we should have a look.
It's got the same speakers that are in that Black Magic amp of theirs, which they say that they're British voiced, which means I assume they are Celestians.
Celestian voiced. What drivers were in the Blackmagic? Was it just a single?
No.
You don't know, do you?
I don't know.
Okay.
No, 112 or 210.
Okay, right. Yeah. So exactly. So that's what I'm saying. I think this is the first time they've done an actual 212.
Yeah, right. Cool.
Slightly less boxy, kind of big gigging rig.
I mean, they, as all Supra amps do, they look absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So classy.
Yeah, yeah.
So classy.
I want to try some more Supra stuff. I've not had a chance to sit down with the whole range. I need to just sit in and give some a go.
The issue I always had with them when we first got them in at GAC was that so often they just didn't have any controls. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it was so limited controls. Whereas this has got like a full EQ,
Speed and depth for the tram, amount
actually
of reverb.
It doesn't have a full EQ. It's got a two-band EQ
well,
still.
Well, that's full enough.
But yeah, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, great. I can't wait to see this. This looks fantastic.
Jay Cross, do you want to tell us a little bit about the brand new pedal from TT Electronic, the Pipeline Tap Tremolo?
Yeah, absolutely. So this... this obviously, you know, TC brought these pedals out. What they the tone print pedals came out what like 6 years ago?
Ooh,
five, six,
know.
7 years ago, maybe.
Think,
no, more than that.
Yeah,
maybe more.
No,
than that.
2010, I think it was that they came out. So I mean, you know, obviously it's a shame that they're replacing the existing tremolo they had. Oh, hang on a sec. No, they're not, because for some reason they'd never done a tremolo pedal before.
Yeah,
it's so weird that they'd never done it. Obviously, they had the shaker, which was the vibrato pedal.
Yeah.
But yeah, they'd never actually done a tremolo before, even with all of those the cheaper pedals that came out earlier in the year.
Yeah.
None of those were tremolos either. I'm pretty sure. So this is the first time I've ever done it. So it looks cool. It looks really nice. It's got like a really cool like surfy. Pale blue vibe going on.
That's green, mate.
Pale blue green.
That's surf green.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Now I've tilted my computer back. It does look a bit green.
I assume it's called the pipeline because isn't that like a surfing thing, like going down the sort of like when the waves form a little pipe?
Oh, maybe.
And it's a surfy sounding tremolo.
And there's a surfboard on the
surf green, and there's a surfboard on the pedal. See?
I think you're right.
So,
I think you've cracked it.
They bamboozled you. So.
Well, yes, they did. They did. But yeah, it looks really cool. So you've got a number of different shapes that you can choose for your wave, and then a number of different subdivisions that you can choose from, and it's fully tone printable. Looks cool. I'm into it. I'd like
to
hear it.
The only thing is that I thought is very weird, considering like what the big competition is in tremolo at the moment.
What's that, Matt?
It's mono.
What would your competition be?
Oh, it is
then?
Mono. You're right. I hadn't noticed, but it is mono. That is very weird.
Because I mean, well, last week we talked about the Strymon. You know, yeah. Obviously the Flint being one of the most popular ones out there, and that's the one that a lot of people go for, or people are going for. You know, H9s or whatever that have got trem sounds on, because people want to run it in stereo because you get that kind of pushing and pulling the speakers across two amps.
I guess the difference is
so
like,
it seems weird that it's in mono, because well, all their other ones, the Helix Phaser, the Vibe, the Chorus, the Flanger are all in stereo.
Yeah, that is weird that the rest of it's mono and the rest of the line is stereo. But I mean, yeah. I guess the difference is this is a quick go-to tremolo. It's not like,
yeah, it'll be £100.
I didn't realise
No, it's the same price as the other ones.
Which is how much?
Like 120
They're 149 now, right. I think.
£149. Wow, okay. See, I didn't realise something like the Flint had crept up to 299 now.
Yeah, they were
really.
259.
They were 249 when I was in the shop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 299's a lot for... So I'm putting together a video for the channel at the moment, which is the top 10 best effects pedals you can buy right now. And
just full stop.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I put the Flint in there. And then after I'd written the script and sort of got all the details, and then as I was reading it out for the video, I was like, and it can be yours for just $299 is quite a lot of money these days. Yeah. So yeah, I was a bit kind of shocked to see that. So I guess this is kind of antithesis of that, really. It's just a fairly affordable pedal that you can just grab and stick on your pedal board and go. But
for me, the overriding thing for me is I'm just glad that TC haven't fully disbanded the project that they started with those compact pedals that they put together, you know, however long ago it was.
They've actually done all the things they could do.
Well,
now.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, when the 15 cheap pedals were announced, I kind of worried, okay, this is where they're going now.
Yeah.
We've sort of, with the glory days of TC are maybe, you know, starting to disappear. But that doesn't appear to be the case. You know, they're still doing these cool compact pedals. I'm just really glad because I've got such a place in my heart for like the Hall of Fame and the Flashback, and I just, you know, I think they're a cool company, and I don't want things to disappear for them.
Speaking of cool companies, Matt, do you want to tell us about the latest release from JHS Pedals?
Yes, the they've been teasing this one for a while on Instagram, and they've just kind of had like plain boxes, kind of short little 15-second clips, and then they've finally announced the updated and reissued JHS Pink Panther Delay. So they actually made this pedal about 10 years ago, and they made less than 100. And they kind of then discontinued it, moved into other things. I think the production cost was maybe a little bit too high at the time. And now they're a much bigger company. They're one of the kind of bigger players in the sort of boutique pedal market. I think it was about time that they sort of reissued it. And what I really like is that they've kind of gone a bit like the Strymon Dig, where they're going, it is a digital delay. We're not trying to model an analog delay. He's based it off one of his favorite delay pedals, the DD5. Bizarrely enough, that's the one people always ask me, and they're like, oh, you know what, you should bring back the DD5. Which I always thought was weird when I started hearing it, but it's been a really, really popular pedal. But yeah, the DD5, the old Ibanez DE7,
yeah,
like that's been making a huge comeback in like social, like they've been talking about it loads on Tone Mob and 60 Cycle Hum, like loads of people have been buying them. The old DOD ones, so they're sort of like late 90s digital delay pedals, basically, that kind of aren't super crisp, but they don't have the kind of high-end roll-off that you get on an analog delay.
I need to reevaluate a DD5, because I remember them sounding okay, but there's so much love for them that I need to yeah, go back and check one out, I think.
Yeah. And I think the nice thing about this is they've kind of added in a little bit of modulation with the mod switch. You've got a few tap tempos. They've added in a tape mode. So if you really do want that kind of more saturated and compressed sound, it's on there. Yeah, I think it was great. But they've put note, this is a digital delay with no intention of giving you smooth spaceship oscillations as you turn the time/speed knob. That's the Panther Cub's job, which is their bigger like analog brother.
But
this looks like a cool pedal, and it's in pink sparkle,
which is always the best. I've got a pink JHS pedals t-shirt on right now, so you know that I'm fully behind the new Pink Panther.
Yeah, it looks really interesting. I'm down.
Yeah, me too. Another pedal I reckon that we're going to be down with is the Midphoria, the latest release from Magnetic Effects. J Cross, you've got the deets.
Yeah, so what's interesting about this is, you know, Magnetic Effects are a company who we've been, you know, chirping on about a lot over the last couple years or so. But they don't actually have that many pedals in their lineup.
And they update them and stuff, but there tends not to be that many new releases.
Yes, and what's funny about this is, so the Midphoria is a cocked wah, and they kind of already did a cocked wah with their double feature, but the double feature was a twin pedal that also had like a fuzz side to it. So one side was fuzz,
right,
and the other side was this cocked wah. And what they've done here is they've just given you a little bit more control, which is, I think, quite a funny way to go about it. What they've done is they want you to have the option to have a cocked wah, but they want you to have a little bit more control and a little bit more flexibility over their existing pedal that's a cocked wah, but not so much control and flexibility as for it to be an actual wah pedal.
Yeah.
But no, this looks really, really cool. So you've got volume, and which they say will offer the option to just work as a really nice clean boost as well. Okay. And yeah, you just dial in the sweet spot for where you want your cocked wah position to be. And you go from there, and it looks fantastic as well. Like a really cool kind of like moddy design, maybe. I'm not sure. It looks fantastic, I think.
I would say 70s carpet.
Yeah.
W.H. Smith carpet.
Yeah, yeah. My favourite.
The thing that I like is that you can actually dial in more clean sound.
Yes.
As well. So you kind
clean
of
blend.
Yeah, so you can basically pick the frequency you want, but it's not so necessarily so like harsh.
Yeah,
because you can dial in some of the clean sound. But I've finally kind of started playing around with a wire a bit more recently, because I've got one on my board and I never step on it. But actually, when you find the sweet spot, sometimes you're just like, oh, it really picks
I'll
out like certain
there.
Frequencies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that's
so
the
actually
thing.
It's quite good. But yeah, used by so many people, those sort of kind of like parked wire sounds.
I was doing a little bit of after this was announced, I was doing a little bit of digging around the internet, because the only other coq-toir that I could think of was the EHX cockfight.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, oh, isn't that funny? You know, pedal, a type of fit that you don't really hear about very often, and then two get released in the same year.
Yeah.
And I just had a look, and actually, the Electro-Harmonics cockfight came out in 2015.
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah.
I just can't believe how long ago that was.
That was the year when
you go all the way back to 1977, you could buy a Boss SP1, which is effectively exactly the same thing.
No one wants that, Matty.
Here we go.
Wait for the SP1W. That's my advice.
What I also found, they did a which they don't do anymore, but there was a Crybaby.
Yeah.
The Crybaby Q Zone.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was looks like an MXR pedal.
Yeah.
Didn't they do a Kerry King signature?
They did.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
But some cool stuff. A lot of weird, like, that's a full range of stuff. A guitar, a couple of guitars, an amp, and a few effects.
Yeah. See, we do talk about guitars on Guitar Nerds all the time. Anyway, with that, we should dive headfirst into a big old barrel of
questions. I don't like being the one who has to do this, because
he'll be back next week.
I'm not as good as Joe, and I know that I'm not as good as Joe, and I don't like that at this very one specific thing. I should add, I'm not as good as Joe at that one specific thing, and I don't like that being highlighted.
Okay, everything so maybe else I need to Joe.
Everything. Oh yeah, completely. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. He's got a better moustache than you.
I can't grow a moustache.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Well, there we go.
Next week, by the way, podcast is my birthday week. So if you guys don't do anything special for me, I'll be very, very upset.
We're all going to get drunk and we're going to swear loads so that you have to go home and do loads of editing.
Good. Thanks for
that. We're going to say loads of libelous stuff.
Oh, that's the worst.
You're going to have to go through and edit it all.
That's the worst, because the swears can stay in and it's not the worst thing in the world. Whereas
when Joe says stuff about his competition.
When Joe says bad things about people who are probably all right, that's when I have to actually edit it out. Anyway, Matt says, pick up advice, please. I have a Chris Shiflett Telecaster Deluxe and I'm considering some different pickups. I play in a pop rock function band and use the clean channel of a Fender Hot Rod FSR with a Tube Screamer and OCD as my main pedals. What do we think, Matt? Pickups for Chris Shiflett?
It's weird, because I'd like to know maybe what he doesn't like about them, because if you're playing in like a pop rock thing through a Fender, I think those Chris Shiflett sound great as they are, because they're Seymour Duncans in those, right?
Yeah, they are. That's right. The only thing I would say is that if he's in a covers band, it's not the most flexible guitar, because there's no coil taps or anything in there.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something to consider.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe going for like more vintage path style would maybe
like
be
lower output,
like lower output, so kind of works with drives a bit better, they're a bit like bassier and they're kind of a bit richer sounding, so you could go for maybe I was gonna say SH Seymour Duncan SH2s or like the JB Jazz, but I'm sure there's something similar to that in there now.
Well, actually, just looking at the spec there, it looks as though they're not Seymour Duncan.
No,
in
I don't think they are. It was just double checking.
They were.
No, I don't think they are. But they're called CS1s, and I think they're just Fender pickups. I think they're voiced specifically for the Chris Shiflett. But if you, as I just did just then, if you have a quick Google and type in Chris Shiflett Telecaster pickups, it's black now. I didn't know that. That's cool.
That's nice. Yeah, I like
they
that.
They do a black one. You seen the black one, Matty?
No.
Yeah, there's a black one. Black and Shoreline Gold. I thought it only came in white.
Yeah, that's nice. I like those two colours. Really nice.
That black looks really cool. Anyway,
So if you Google it, basically the first thing that comes up is...
is an interview with him by Seymour Duncan that says, Chris Shiflett, long-time user of Seymour Duncan pickups.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So presumably, if they are...
It says right there. So yeah, they're called...
Yeah, CS humbuckers. Yeah, so they'll be Fender, Seymour Duncan style, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Can I say that?
I mean, as a good all-round versatile kind of rock and vintage humbucker set, JB and 59.
Yep.
Seymour Duncan. I mean, that's the classic combo, really.
Yeah, that would definitely work.
you know, you've got a high output bridge, you've got a lower output neck position. They clean up really well. The bridge will give you all the big rock sounds. You could coil tap them if you wanted to, but they clean up really nicely and they're really responsive to your tone control.
I mean, the other...
And they wouldn't be overly expensive because we could start going into bare knuckles or kind of Monty's pickups. But if you're looking at 200, 250 quid, you know, it can get pretty pricey.
The other combination I'd recommend is the what they call the... Oh, I can't remember what they call it now, but the JB and Jazz is another one. So JB in the bridge and Jazz in the neck is another one. There is another option, of course, maybe the Fat Cat in the neck, the Seymour Duncan Fat Cat, which is the humbucker size P90. Do the same as that Lee Marley guitar. Yeah. You know, if you're looking at kind of a kind of poppier rock band these days, I guess Bring Me the Horizon are up there.
Yeah,
I actually prefer it the other way though, and having the P90 in the bridge. Yeah, because then you get a really grungy kind of like rocky sound in the bridge, but then you get really smooth sounds in the neck.
You could definitely do that as well. Yeah, but you'd have to be careful to balance it out. So maybe like the Fat Cat, and then one of the PAFs, like the 59. That would probably meet up output wise roughly, I guess.
Yeah, or the SH2, I think, is one of the lowest output ones.
Is that the Jazz, SH2?
Is that the Jazz? I don't know. I always get confused because some people call it the Jazz or the JB, but then they also have the... Because they always say the Slash Set, but I think the Slash Set is just the same as an SH4, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It doesn't really make any sense. That numbering never made any sense to me. I'm sure there's a technical reason behind it.
Yeah. So, a few different options, but I think if you don't want to spend mega money and you want something versatile, then Seymour Duncan do some great sets. The way to actually get the best value for money is go for one of their pre-built sets, like the whatever the set is called that's the JB and the Jazz, I think would be...
I think I've just had a look. I think they just called it JB Jazz set.
Yeah. I think that would be a good option. Joe says, I fancy a wee treat. £50, £60 pedal or something. Any recommendations? Thinking about the EHX Crayon. Matty, what are you saying? 50 or 60 quid, new or second hand? What are you thinking?
I kept reading it. I was like, Crayon? I was like... But the Canyon, I'm sure the Canyon's like way more money. And I was like, oh, wait, no, Crayon.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was actually just having a look and a list through a load of cool sort of pedals for that sort of money. There's the Hotone Crush Bit Crusher, which is 70 quid if you want to go totally out there. One pedal we've mentioned before and actually would be kind of really practical and it's a bit weird, the Electro-Harmonix Analogizer.
Because
that is a bit weird and it is a bit of fun, but it works so well with other pedals. And if you've got like a digital delay pedal or something like that, or you want to just add some weirdness to a drive, that is a cool pedal.
Yeah, it doesn't do a whole lot, but
it doesn't do a whole lot on its own.
No,
but it does a lot when you put it with other pedals.
Yeah. I really liked how they marketed it as like behind a delay, behind a digital delay, to give it a bit more warmth.
Yeah,
I thought that sounded fantastic.
Yeah, really nice. Jay, any thoughts? 50, 60 quid?
I tell you what I've been thinking about buying.
Okay.
For 50 or 60 quid.
But a lot of pizzas.
Is five pizzas or so? I really want a random tone generator.
I was just thinking about that and I couldn't remember what it was called. It's like, yeah, okay.
Again, Electro-Harmonix, the RTG is so weird and completely pointless, but fantastic.
Yeah.
Just sounds really, really weird and cool. I'm not sure it's quite what Joe is suggesting, but it might be cool putting it into, because there's no... input, there's only an output.
Yeah.
You can't put anything into the random tone generator. It just produces random tones. Sorry, it generates random tones. But it might be cool putting it into, if you've got a pedal that has got an effects loop built in, maybe sticking it into the return of the effects loop, or if you've got a pedal that's got stereo in, pop it into there just to kick it in every now and again whilst you're doing...
Actually, you know what you could use? You know, we talked about that Matthews effect, like stereo to mono sum. You could just buy something like that and have a tone generator.
and run that in line with the guitar, basically.
Yeah, and then run that in line with the guitar. Or, yeah, or just a cheap like Fender AB box, I suppose. But those little Matthew effects, you can actually put it under the pedal board, and then you could just turn the random tone generator on or off when you wanted it to. And it would run like in parallel, wouldn't it?
I mean, surely any cheap ABY box would do the same job.
Yeah, but I suppose they just take up more space. Yeah, I'm always thinking about space, Mark.
I know. Of course. And one other person who's thinking about space is Stuart, who says, "Can you recommend a good expression pedal?" Now, in the Facebook group, he was talking about something that's not too bulky and not mega money. Matt, you're probably the man to ask about this. The expression pedal to go for.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's going to have to be my product of the week, my product placement of the week.
Oh, Matt Knight, come on.
Well, I mean, I've used a Roland EV5 for ages, but the problem I found with those was that they're obviously a bit, they're plastic.
Yeah.
They're obviously still solid, but they are plastic. And actually, if you look recently, people making expression pedals like Dunlop, Mission Engineering. I mean, some of the Mission Engineering expression pedals are like nearly £200.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
And the Dunlop, I think the... was it called the Dunlop X? The Volume X, which I think was also an expression, is £134. They're very bulky. They're bigger than most normal pedals. The Boss EV30, which was the expression pedal we did last year, £85.
Okay.
And it's dual output. So you can do two things at once. They can work in reverse. You've got adjustable sort of pedal feel. They're a smaller footprint than most other volume pedals. And you know it's going to be super sturdy. And it's all metal. So,
Jay,
rock solid for me.
Anything to counter any Fender products that you want to... any sort of Fender expression pedals that you want to be...
No. I'll probably side with Matt on this one. I do really like the Dunlop DVP.
Yeah.
But it's very big.
Yes.
That's the problem. I really liked treading on it. I thought it was extremely nice to tread on.
Yeah.
And I thought that, but inherently, it's always going to be a trade-off between something that's comfortable and easy to use. For that particular setting, it's always going to be a trade-off between something that's comfortable and easy to use and something that takes up a lot of space.
Yeah, so. Definitely. So, a couple of options there, depending on how much space is of a premium. And with that, we are almost up at an hour, so we should wind this thing in. If you want to hear another half an hour of Guitar Nerds podcast, we'll be doing that over at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we are going to talk about, get ready, chaps, we are going to talk about our gear of the year so far. For 2017. We're nearly halfway through the year. It's time to start thinking the first half of the year. You know, we've had Winter Nam, we've had a few other big shows. What has stood out? What could potentially make it onto our end of the year gear of the year list?
This is quite handy as well because we can record this now.
Yeah.
And then on, you know, the middle of December, the day before we record Gear of the Year, we can go, oh no, we've forgotten everything.
Exactly.
And we can go back and we'll listen
to
this.
It's useful for us and potentially interesting for everyone else.
But mainly...
useful for us.
Yes.
Saves us time when we're all boozed up near Christmas.
Well, completely.
Indeed. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you access to the regular podcast, ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the extra half an hour every week, plus all the interviews that we do, plus the mini-series Branton's Rant On, plus access to the upcoming mini-series Gear of Yesteryear, where we look through old guitar mags and talk about their gear of the year choices, and that gives you access to everything on the Patreon channel. That I think is like, we're creeping up on 90 hours, something like that, of content to listen to, all for $5 a month. There is one top tier, our $10 executive producer level, which means that we read your name out on the regular podcast like this.
How are we doing this? Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Matcher, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Gorrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moog Gravett, Colin Anderson. I didn't really judge the ending of that one,
no,
did I?
Very poor.
Sorry.
Very poor. Branton would have done a better job with that one, I reckon.
Okay, well, you can have him back next week.
If you want more of that, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram @guitar nerds. You can go to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, where we've got a couple of new list videos going up and potentially a pedal of the week video once Branton, if he makes it through his studio ordeal. And most importantly, you can go to facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where you can chat to other Guitar Nerds listeners. You can submit questions for the podcast and you could submit questions on the forum itself. And potentially you can find out if this podcast exists on iTunes post the last episode. So
are we just yelling into space?
I feel like that's what we do every week.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, there just happen to be some people out there who receive it.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We will speak to you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.